Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Today we have a story of a 20-plus year revenge coming back to the surface. We'll get into that in a bit, but first, not a Chinese takeaway. Growing up, our house number was one digit from the local Chinese takeaway, and on a batch on menu sent out, our number was put on instead. Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, we'd get calls trying to place orders. Didn't matter how many times we tell people they were calling a private number and not a takeaway, we still got calls. The Chinese refused to do anything about it, and my parents didn't see that they should change their number, so my dad would take orders, putting on different voices, tell them it would be 40 minutes for delivery, and if they called back, he'd apologize and tell them he'd throw in some free spring rolls or whatever, and the driver was just leaving. If they called back again, he'd tell them they called the wrong number and gave the actual restaurant's number for them to call and complain to. Went on for a few weeks, but the menus were redone and sent out, and the takeaway ended up changing number in a bid to stop my dad taking orders. To be honest, most Chinese takeaway menu flyers that I've seen handed out were not necessarily like masterpieces that could not be afforded to remake. And honestly, this isn't even the first story of a business who found out that they put out an advertising piece with the wrong number and were so nonchalant about it. I don't understand how you can be that way when you literally put out an advertising piece that has the main form of contact completely incorrect so they'll never get to you. Grouchy Ad 4338 wrote, "Great one. Your dad got a good revenge." Having said that, the restaurant must be run by morons. I mean, why won't they correct the menu when it would mean a bunch of people with incorrect numbers won't be ordering from them? If I was in their place, I would correct it right away. Also, hi, I'm Steven, and if you guys enjoy great stories of revenge, it would be amazing if you left a like or left a review if you're listening to my podcast. That said, our next story is, I use all my parents' gas rewards points. Background: my mom is a horrible abuser and my dad enables her, always has. They live in Washington, where Safeway is a common grocery store. I moved to Austin when I'm 19 and find that Randall's is a common grocery store in Texas. And wow, they look a lot like Safeway. Weird. I wonder if they're owned by the same company. Getting gas there for the first time, the pump asked for the Randall's Rewards phone number, so it occurred to me to try my parents' phone number. And it worked! $1.25 saved in my tank of gas. Excellent. I'm 38 years old. I've been doing this since I was 19. 3 or 4 times a year, I'll get gas at a Randall's and use all their rewards points. My mom can no longer drive, but my dad still can. So I'll stop when he stops driving. So my question is, why would OP ever stop? Is this guaranteed to be using points that they've acquired? Because it sounds to me like just a preferred customer system where you have a rewards phone number, so you save an extra percentage on gas. Coder Joe wrote, why stop then? Nobody will use the free gas if neither of them drive. Our next story is, landlord decided to kick out a tenant with a beautiful garden that the person had planted himself and use the garden to increase rent? Well, get freaked, bench. This isn't mine, I found it on Twitter and decided to share it here, because it fits quite well. Friend is being kicked out of his flat that has a garden because the landlord wants to charge much, much higher rent. Friend has carefully removed every single thing he planted. The landlord says, it's worth more with all the freaking plants. How am I meant to get more rent now? The best bit was he waited until the landlord had taken loads of photos of the garden for the advert, had people round a view, and been told contracts have been signed by the new tenants, who are expecting a beautiful garden as opposed to the bare patch of dirt that now exists. Muting this because lots of you seem to really love landlords and some of you think I should chastise my actual friend who is being kicked out of his home specifically so the landlord can make more cash. Cracked. I don't know if that's like the kind of thing you can put in a clause where it's like, anything you grow in the soil on land is a part of the land and therefore the landlord's property. Otherwise, I just see it as, hey, you're leaving and you're taking the property that you put there. Happy Freaking Cake Day wrote, LOL, I read an almost identical story a while back. This gal rented a mid-house with a big backyard, but the backyard was mostly dirt or concrete. She was a gardener and had tons of pots and a couple of raised beds that she had built. She had everything from flowers to herbs and vegetables back there. The landlord decided to renovate, aka legally kick someone out of their home, to charge more rent. Gave the tenant notice that they would not be renewing their lease. The gal did what the guy in the story did and removed every plant and raised flower bed that she made from scratch. Same thing happened. The landlord got ticked and threw a big tantrum. They had already posted photos with the backyard beautiful and lush and green everywhere. Maybe this is one of those stories that gets passed around on the internet in a million different variations. Maybe it's coincidence. The world may never know, but I've thought about this story more than a few times since I first read it years ago. Our next story is, your appointment is now canceled. You really never realize something is going to go on as long as it does until you look back. 2 years ago, I was given a new-to-me phone number when I purchased a cell phone. Immediately, I was bombarded by friends, family, and collection agents of the previous owner of the number, not the phone. They were all looking for the same woman by name. First couple of months, I answered that the person must have changed their number, that I just got this number with a new phone. No harm, no foul. But it hasn't stopped. And I found out why. She is still giving out this number. One day, she logged into her name redacted coffee app, and it sent this phone the signup code. I bounced to it and logged in with the code. The account had her email address. Finally, I can let her know what's going on and hopefully stop this crap. I used that info to contact her. I told her I'm sure she didn't mean any harm, but it's become ridiculous. Please stop giving out this number. She replied that I'm some kind of stalker freak. I replied that if she continues to give out my number, I will cancel every appointment that comes across and tell family she died and tell creditors where to find her. She blocked my email. I figured all is well if she stops. She didn't. Okay, bet. A month ago, her application for a school was canceled. Today, her dental appointment for Thursday was canceled. Stop sending your crap to my number. I plan to finally change this number when I get a personal issue resolved, but honestly, I'm low-key enjoying this, and she's still giving out the number, so... Edit, so I had someone warning me that I was going to go to federal prison for 25 years for this. Guys, I'm only reacting to her actions. It is easily provable, with the email I have and the dates that she continues to give out this number, that she is the harasser. If she goes to a new doctor and gives this number, that's harassment to me. Writing a C to reply to a text is not a federal crime. Chill. I don't know anything about whether or not this could possibly become some kind of crime, federal or not, but stories like this and...
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes. Nice
dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about UnitedHealthcare coverage at UH1.com. That's UH1.com.
Storytime is sponsored by BetterHelp. Nearly everyone at some point in their life will struggle with their mental health, whether that's something stressful at work, in a personal relationship, or something else. I know that I really struggled with anxiety in my early 20s, and therapy was a massive help for me. That's why I'm a massive fan of therapy, and today's sponsor, BetterHelp. If there is anything in your life, big or small, that is negatively affecting you, get it off your chest with BetterHelp. It's an online therapy service that, after finishing a small questionnaire, will match you with a licensed therapist, where you can book appointments that match up with your schedule at any place or any time. And if you feel like you're not bonding with your therapist, you can switch at any point for free. Also, therapy isn't just if you're struggling with mental health. If you're looking for guidance or ways to improve your social skills, life, or relationships, it's a great judgment-free way of doing that. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/StorytimePod today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/StorytimePod. My personal experience of losing my first phone number is exactly the reason why I feel like it's so important to try to retain the same number for as long as you can. If you just think about all the services and places that you use a phone number to log in, imagine one day you just don't have access to that number, or you switched carriers and switched numbers. All of a sudden, any place that you use that number for a login, you're gonna have to try to figure out how to switch over. Any login that you used that gives security codes to log in to that number, you're gonna have to figure that out. When I first switched phone numbers a number of years back, it was such a headache. And also, kind of downright embarrassing when you log into an old account you didn't update, and all of a sudden it says, "We sent a security code to some old number that surely somebody else is using by now." This next story is, not going to pay overtime? Think again. I was discussing this sub with a good friend and he said, boy, have I got a story that'll fit. It wasn't his story, but his brother's, and I sat with him and got the details. Buckle up, it's a good one and a long one. Let's call him Bob. Bob has been fiddling with computers since he was a kid and knows them pretty well. As with most IT people, he's moved from job to job. The employer he's worked for has a service/distribution company, and there were two IT employees. The company was located in Ontario, Canada. About 3 years ago, Bob's employer decided to modernize their software. They had separate programs for dispatching, for inventory, for payroll and finances, and it was complicated moving information from one program to the other. They decided to get an ERP, Enterprise Resource Planning Program, and Bob recommended one that he knew inside out from a previous employer. For those of you who don't know, an ERP program handles everything. Purchase orders, sales, inventory, personnel, vendors, customers, all of it. You can run a report and find out which customer has bought the most part ABC in the last year. Which salesman has improved his numbers the most? Which vendor has the fastest delivery time? Which shipper packed the most orders? Everyone in the company used the ERP program, but it was very complicated, and they used the aspects of it that related to their position. For example, the receiver would accept a shipment, verify the quantity, confirm it was received, and the inventory stats would be available to the salespeople if they wanted to look up how many were on hand. The receiver didn't care what the price was or who the vendor was, he just did his job. Bob was run ragged during the implementation process, but he managed to train most of the employees on their aspects. And after a few months, everything was running fairly smoothly. Bob still got tickets for tweaks in the operation of the software and occasional hardware IT issues. Then the company decided to expand their footprint and was marketing into different time zones. That messed things up. Atlantic Canada is 90 minutes early, so if someone sent an email or an order at 8 a.m. their time, it would arrive at 6:30 a.m. Ontario time. Pacific Canada is 3 hours late, so an email sent at 3 p.m. Vancouver time would arrive at 6 p.m. This stretched out the day, so many staff came in early and worked late. Bob would arrive at 8 a.m., and there would be people that demanded his immediate assistance and were annoyed that he didn't respond instantly, even though their request was submitted before his start time. Same with late in the day, his phone would ring at dinner time with people that wanted help right now. They decided to stagger his and his IT colleagues' shift times. Bob would start at 6 a.m. and work till 2:30, and his colleague would start at 10:30 and work till 7 p.m. Bob's colleague had kids and refused the shift change. The employer insisted, the colleague quit. That meant that Bob was the only person in the IT department. The employer said that they would look to hire a new IT guy, but they had trouble finding one that knew the ERP system, and they were offering well under a market value salary. Bob asked for a raise and was denied. Then he wanted overtime, and the employer told him that as an IT specialist, he was exempt from overtime laws in Ontario. Bob looked it up, and the employer was correct. This went on for some time, and he knew lots of IT people socially. They told him what the company was offering, and Bob knows that they wouldn't find another tech. Things went downhill from there. Bob would get chewed out if he missed a call or an email, no matter what time it came in. He had to train new hires in the ERP system, as well as take care of the hardware. He asked repeatedly for better compensation and was denied. So he planned to get a new job. Now here's the revenge. Bob had access to the entirety of the ERP program. When a user signed in, the time was logged, and even if they didn't sign out, after 15 minutes it would log them out anyway. Everyone in the company was on salary, and many of them came in early and stayed late. Ontario labor laws states that even salaried workers are entitled to overtime after 44 hours a week, unless they were managers or supervisors. So Bob jumped into the program and ran a report for each employee that wasn't a manager, all the way back to when the ERP program was started. Then he reached out to an employment lawyer and got the okay to refer employees to him. Bob lined up another job, and after he left, every employee in the company got an email with an Excel sheet showing the hours they had put in past 44 hours a week. The subject line said, "You're legally entitled to overtime pay." In the body of the email was the lawyer's name. The crap hit the fan. Almost every employee authorized the lawyer to negotiate with the company on their behalf, and the company had to pay a ton of money. All the company had to do was pay Bob for the extra work he put in. Instead, they had to pay almost everyone. I think the main and pretty much only thing I want to know is, would the people that were in those positions that denied Bob the raise or extra compensation know that it was Bob that set this whole thing up? Or would they just think this was some rogue employee, not necessarily Bob? Or like, this might be the world's greatest class settlement lawyer. Nod Mikkel wrote, "You've never heard of time zones? Atlantic Canada is ahead, Pacific Canada is behind. Is it that hard for the company to simply state their hours followed by EST, Eastern Standard Time? That way those in different time zones know when the company will be opened or closed." Our next story is, "I ruined my ex-boyfriend's life 20 plus years ago, and I just made sure it stayed ruined. When I was in college in the 90s, I met Jake, then male 23, through mutual friends. He had already graduated and was planning to move to the opposite side of the United States for grad school, and I'd already been making plans to move with friends only a 90-minute drive away from where he was moving to. We had so much in common, fell in love, and it really seemed like fate, both planning to move 3,000 miles and landing so close together. He had two sisters and a younger brother who were all awesome people, and I became instant friends with them as well. Because he was in school and I was working, I would usually go to him to hang out on weekends. He was renting a house with two roommates, also in his program. We were young, so money was tight, but we had fun. Went for taco dates and spent a lot of time at his house where he was breeding and selling small animals. Jake was an animal sciences PhD student, so being around animals was normal and I loved it. I met and became friends with his advisor's wife, Mary, female, mid-50s, who worked in administration at the university. She is a...
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
A lovely woman, and I would often have lunch with her when I went over on weekends. Jake was a teaching assistant, TA, and I met other people in the program and made friends with them faster than he did. After about 2 years of dating, I was at the house one day, laying in bed together, in a state of some undress, and he said out of the blue, he was concerned I'd been gaining weight, and it made it harder for him to be attracted to me. No concern about my health, it was all about him finding me unattractive. I sat up and said, "Well, then maybe you should make sure there's better food for me to eat than crackers and cheese when I come up on weekends." Even at 23, I didn't take that kind of BS. I had gained maybe 10 pounds since meeting him 2 years earlier and still wore the same size clothes, about a US size 6 to 8. I wasn't going to engage in a fight about it after all. It was his problem, not mine. So I asked him calmly, "So what is your solution to this?" He stared at me blankly and said, "Well, I guess that you should try to lose weight." And I said, "Nah, I'm not going to do that, so what are you going to do about it?" He said, "Well, I guess nothing. I wanted to let you know how I feel." And I said, "Cool, thank you." Put my clothes back on, went to sleep, and drove home the next day as usual. We kept dating, and about 3 months later, he called me and said he wanted to break up after close to 3 years. The reason, and I quote, "You don't know enough about science." He felt like he couldn't have a conversation with me about his work where he didn't have to use common names for animals instead of scientific ones. I said, "Well, that's bullcrap. What's the real reason?" He said it was the real reason. He came to see me a month later to return something of mine, and I confronted him, demanding the real reason. He finally admitted that he'd been seeing one of his undergrad students, let's call her Meg, a 19-year-old. He was then 26. And her teacher. I screamed at him to leave. My roommate threatened to throw him off our second floor balcony if he didn't go, and he left. It hit me all at once after he walked out, and I went from rage to stunned laughter. I'd met Meg a few times, and at one point, she was at his house for a barbecue and spilled something all over her pants. Jake asked me if I could loan her some sweats. I couldn't because I was a size 8 and she was a size 18. Nothing wrong with that at all. But the point is, I realized he made those comments about my weight to try and get me to break up with him because he was a coward. He clearly liked a big gal. Although when he'd said those things to me about my weight, it was 1 a.m. I lived about 95 miles away and we had just hooked up. So I don't know how he thought this would go. Even in hindsight, it perplexes me. Did he think that I was going to break up with him and storm off into the night and drive for an hour and a half? Anyway, I emailed his roommates. It was the early 2000s. It's how you communicated anything you didn't want to say on the phone. I wanted to let them know we'd broken up and that they were always lovely to me and thanked them for being friends. They both admitted they knew about Meg and were the ones to demand that Jake tell me or they would. That's when he broke up with me with a lame, "You don't understand science" excuse. One of his roommates, a super nice, super cute guy named George, offered to help me get a few things still at their house that he had collected for me away from around the house. He suggested I come up for the weekend. We go out and drink and have a good time. All the things Jake didn't want to waste money on. And I said, sure. So I went up and George let me into the house while Jake was gone. I took photos of all of his animals because while I might not be a PhD student, I paid attention and I knew he had an endangered species in his care. He wasn't breeding it. It was an unreleasable animal he had taken in from a rescue organization. There was paperwork that he had to submit with a $25 fee and he refused to do it, saying he didn't want the government in his business. I took photos of that animal, all his breeding conditions, and a photo of an animal not allowed in the state, which was in a tank right next to a window and visible from outside. I then went out for a night on the town with George. We stumbled in early, around midnight, so Jake and Meg, who were watching TV, would see me in a short dress. Drunk, and George practically carrying me, I spent the night in George's room. He was a total gentleman, but made sure to leave the room and parade past them in his boxers a few times, and we giggled and moaned loudly so they could hear us. When I went to leave the next morning, Jake said I didn't have to act like a tramp in front of him as I ate a donut slowly in my rumpled dress with messy hair, while George beamed at me and then planted a kiss on my head. Meg looked ashamed, not quite knowing where to look, and I said, "Have fun with my leftovers," and walked out. I wanted to think the petty, loud hookup and a few juvenile insults was my revenge. It was not. The next day, I had my photos developed. Ah, the good old days. And called the state office of Fish and Wildlife. I reported the animals in the house, the potential overcrowding of breeding animals, and the two animals he shouldn't legally have at all in the state, and asked them how to make a report. Turns out Jake wasn't well liked by his peers in his program, or by his roommates, but I was. George had suggested that he and their other roommate could submit complaints to the university that a TA was sleeping with one of his students and showing her favoritism. The night we were out at the bars, we made sure to tell the story to anyone who they knew. They made sure all the women in his classes knew he was sleeping with Meg. It was a large program, so people knew fast he had cheated and was now dating his student. George and the other roommate made sure people knew they had put in complaints, sick of Jake's entitled BS. With my full statement made and photos sent to state wildlife officials, I called my friend Mary, Jake's advisor's wife. She knew about the breakup and the lame reason, and I let her know he admitted he was sleeping with a student. I'd been emailing with him and he admitted to it in writing, so I sent that to Mary. To say she was not happy about that was an understatement. She said she made sure it would be investigated and told her husband, Jake's direct advisor, while I was on the phone with her. Speaking of investigations, a few weeks later, George called me, giddy, to say state fish and wildlife officials were there confiscating animals. He told them he would be happy to tell them whatever they needed to know. Meg was there when it happened and told the officials, as far as she knew, all the animals belonged to her boyfriend Jake and that they were all legal. That put George and the other roommate in the clear. One animal was kept in the backyard, so it was implied to Jake that a neighbor reported it. While they were there to investigate, they knew to look in the back window to see the far more problematic, illegal to have in the state under nearly any circumstances, animal. Since George was on the lease, he was able to let them in to investigate in the house. The animals were all in communal areas, and the officer stayed there for a few hours and returned with a warrant to take all the animals and enter Jake's room to investigate. George and the other roommate let them into their rooms with no issues and were quickly cleared. Meg apparently couldn't get a hold of Jake and eventually drove to the university to find him. Remember, no cell phones yet. It was a good day. The only animals left were some guppies and a fish tank. Now, PhD students need grant money to do research, and a large part of animal studies funding comes from the federal government. Jake had just gotten an EPA grant right around when he broke up with me, so I called the EPA and asked how I would report that a person with a federal grant was being investigated for illegally harboring endangered animals. Long story short, he lost his EPA grant and had to make restitution on what had already been used, close to $30,000. He would never be able to get another federal grant. He avoided jail time on the state charges, since all the animals were in good health, but lost all his breeding animals, worth thousands of dollars, since they were collected for safekeeping during the investigation when the two illegal animals were taken. In the end, he owed a $15,000 fine, and the two animals went to a nearby nature center. For years, I would stop by if I was in the area to visit them. The university revoked his scholarship and fired him from teaching for having an inappropriate relationship with a student. He somehow escaped being expelled, but it always shocked me that he never tried to hide the relationship with Meg, and was so stupidly self-assured he didn't even wait the 4 weeks until she would have been done with his class to start publicly dating her. By the university rules, he would have been in the clear to date her, not being her teacher anymore, and she would have just had to avoid any classes he was a TA in. It never fails to make me laugh. After a few months, I emailed his sisters and told them I missed them because Jake broke up with me after trying to call me fat and cheating on me, and I felt weird contacting them. The girls told me he told the family I broke up with him because of the distance. I forwarded them emails that Jake wrote after the breakup, talking about how he fell for Meg and he was sorry about it, but it was true. I couldn't keep up with him academically, and it made him attracted to Meg. Jake managed to convince his dad to pay for one more year of school so he could get a master's instead of a PhD. And while I stayed in contact with his sisters and brother via email and then social media, I largely let it all go. I got even, made some friends, Mary became like an auntie to me, and I went on with life. I went on to get a master's degree myself. And my specialty? Helping scientists and doctors communicate their work to lay people. You know, us dummies who can't remember all the scientific names. I swear it happened by accident, not design, but I love it, and I work with everyone from small-town doctors and nurses to pharmaceutical companies to museums to state and federal governments to film and TV producers. I travel a lot and speak and get to learn a lot of cool things about our planet and how things work. I knew through his siblings that Jake and Meg got married and had two kids. Meg dropped out of the sciences and became an accountant. Jake went back to breeding animals. Every once in a while, his sisters or brother would tell me something over for lunch or via text, but we had our own relationship that exists outside of him. Apparently, when I sent a wedding gift for one of his sisters, he loudly complained at a co-ed bridal shower that all of his siblings were still my friend and didn't make an effort to embrace his now wife, Meg. Apparently, the sister just laughed and said, "I don't make it a habit to be friends with homewreckers." This is how Jake's parents found out how their relationship started and ours ended 10 years after we broke up. Jake never found out I was behind reporting him to the state, and in the end, I didn't lie about a single thing. Except maybe exaggerating a drunken makeout session with George, who is now a successful and tenured professor with a lovely wife and daughters. Fast forward about 20 years to a few weeks ago. I was at a university giving a lecture to a room of 250 undergrads and grad students. In the end, I was mingling with a student afterwards and I hear a voice say, "Hey Opie, long time no see." And I realize it's Jake, and I didn't change the expression on my face at all. I was completely shocked, and my instinct was to play dumb. So I said, "I'm sorry, help me out. Have we met at another workshop or lecture?" He looked incredulous and said, "It's me, Jake." And I said, "I can't place you, but I would love to figure it out." Finally, I gasped and said, "Oh my goodness, Jake! I guess I blocked you out." And said, "Well, lovely to see you." And moved on quickly when he tried to reach out and hug me. I was happy to leave it there, with the satisfaction of him seeing me as a guest lecturer in a science department of a major university when he was just in the audience. The department chair and faculty who had invited me to speak took me out to dinner, and while there, one of them said, "So you know Jake?" I said I did from over 20 years ago, being vague about how. She went on to tell me that he'd been there for an interview for a teaching position, and had spent a few days there observing and they were likely going to hire him. I couldn't control it. I scoffed. When they all looked at me, I said, "I'm sorry, I'm just shocked he's teaching after what happened at University X." They said, "What happened?" And I said, "He was sleeping with a 19-year-old student when he was 26, and he had to leave the program without a PhD because he couldn't afford to stay after losing his scholarship." The three people I was with all looked at each other like they knew they had a problem and said, "Wow, we'll have to look into that," and change the subject. My old friend Mary, retired a year or two now but still friendly with her old colleagues, called me this weekend to say a friend at the university let her know someone had called doing a background check about Jake, and they pulled his file, which included being fired, leaving the program with a lower degree, and the complaint letters from over 20 years ago about his conduct. Mary's name had been on it with her husband listed as the faculty advisor, so she thought she'd like to know. As a bonus, it had a copy of his arrest record for the illegal animals. I guess his dad had paid for a decent lawyer to get the record expunged after the charges were reduced and he paid the fines so it doesn't show up on a standard background check. I don't think he's going to get that job. So I'll return to my life, content that the universe comes through sometimes, especially if you give it a little nudge now and then. The best revenge is when you don't have to do anything wrong. You just have to help direct knowledge to the right places. If there is anything I can impart to any young women and men reading this, as I shimmy happily into my now size 10 pants, it's that if someone who is supposed to love you complains about your weight or looks, that is their problem to fix mentally, not yours. And maybe it's time to check out what they're doing behind your back, or simply move on. Remember though, it is their flaw, not yours. If Jake hadn't been a coward and tried to make me break up with him and just ended things with me in a mature way, I might not have found out about Meg and turned his own wickedness back on himself. Sometimes you just gotta sit back in amazement at how sometimes the universe aligns so perfectly that 20 years later you can bring this all just right back up to the surface and continue getting revenge. It's like every 10 years there's a countdown timer to reset the next layer of revenge. 10-year revenge, 20-year revenge, see you again in another 10 years. But with that being said, that's all the time we have for today. Now, if you want to hear another absolutely awesome revenge story, check out that video on the left. Or if you missed my latest video, check out that video on the right. That said, I'll see you all next time with some more stories.